Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Happy Independence Day. I'm a positive person, and there is hope. So I kept the happy in there, even though there's a lot to be unhappy about this 4th of July. Mainly three things. Our people's loss of independence, our failure to understand what independence is, and worst of all, our failure to even know who we are. Probably we should rename this day Lack of Independence Day. So many of our people don't realize they lost their independence and freedom long, long ago. The official celebration in my city is nothing but a rah-rah session for the regime's military, with nary a mention of freedom, self-determination, or liberty. If the Blancos do mention freedom, it's like a murmur coming from the mouth of an undead corpse. It's a reference to some imagined quality, possessed equally, of course, by red, brown, black, and white Americans, the meaning and nature of which has been forgotten in the mists of time. Such freedom doesn't exist anyway, since all the undead can do is make mouth sounds they don't understand in a futile attempt to simulate human life. I assume that my listeners are among the living, however. So get out those made-in-China fireworks and whoop it up if you want to. I don't care if you do or you don't. I know your children probably like fireworks, but don't ever forget what this day stands for. One hell of a lot of people suffered and died for the independence the foolish and the stupid have thrown away. Spend 1 hour studying and thinking about what independence really means, 1 hour out of 24, and share what you learn with your children. Let's start now. Let's start with a principle to remember. Any people which accepts multiracial democracy soon loses the ability to control its government. Soon it is no longer their government, and then they are slaves without independence. The very definition of independence and freedom is having living space, which is for your people and your people alone, and living under a government which is answerable to your people and your people alone. Anything else is slavery. And slavery is what we have now. Every few years, the satraps, still calling themselves the U.S. Congress, try to outdo themselves in racial abasement during the renewal of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. The Voting Rights Act, signed by President Lyndon Johnson, was one of many anti-white and anti-American initiatives that took place that year. 1965 was also the year our borders were opened, our pro-white immigration laws were scrapped, and the people's silver was brazenly stolen, for example. The purpose of the Voting Rights Act was to dismantle every state and local law, such as literacy tests, that tended to favor white voters. Certain counties, and even whole states, had to submit every voter registration or district boundary change to the federal government in Washington before it could be approved. In some areas, the federal Department of Justice moved in and controlled everything, shouldering local officials aside. How did the act determine which areas needed federal control and which didn't? One of the sections of that law is a requirement that any state or county with a history of favoring white interests gets pre-approval from the U.S. Justice Department or a federal court before they are allowed to change their election laws or procedures. That's right. Federal control kicks in if the multiracialist bureaucrats decide that a state or county has a history of favoring white interests. If officials favor non-white interests, no problem. If they favor blacks or mestizos or even illegals, no problem. But if the bureaucrats decide they've ever favored whites or favor whites now, that must be stopped. It's easy to see where this act has led and will continue to lead. Voter registration rules must be written, and district boundaries must be drawn, and every other jot and tittle of regulation must be crafted to increase non-white representation and decrease that of whites. It's a one-way ratchet, dispossessing white people of representation. As we published the last time this act came up for renewal, the Voting Rights Act was aimed at thwarting the efforts of whites to protect their race's interests in states that had large black minorities. As different and in many ways unequal races, whites and blacks have necessarily diverging interests, making racial conflict inevitable in any society in which both races live in large numbers. This antagonism was created by the granting of citizenship to former slaves following the Civil War, and was foreseen years earlier by Thomas Jefferson, who anticipated the sorts of conflicts that would result from attempts to equalize the races, of which the Voting Rights Act is but one of many examples. A member of the American Colonization Society, Jefferson advocated the colonization of freed slaves outside of the United States. To the objections of the egalitarians of his time, he replied in words that now seem hauntingly prophetic. Jefferson wrote, quote, "It will probably be asked, why not retain and incorporate the blacks into the state, and thus save the expense of supplying by importation of white settlers the vacancies they will leave? Deep-rooted prejudices entertained by the whites, 10,000 recollections by the blacks of the injuries they have sustained, new provocations, the real distinctions which nature has made, and many other circumstances will divide us into parties and produce convulsions which will probably never end but in the extermination of one or the other race." Close quote. Almost 50 years have now passed since Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law. In that period of time, the U.S. Congress has perversely favored the interests of the black race at the expense of the interests of the race of most of its members. Jewish domination of the means by which information is disseminated to the American people, a development never envisioned by Jefferson, has made many of them afraid to do otherwise. This fear has been the decisive factor in black ascendancy over the past two generations, which has necessarily taken place at white expense. The convulsions that Jefferson predicted have not yet ended, and America's present demographic trends are such that if her leaders do not soon begin to heed his words, the race in whose extermination they will end will be ours. What Jefferson wanted, and what the pre-Voting Rights Act laws tried to secure for us, was independence. White Americans fought hard for independence. Independence as a people. A people with a shared ancestry, shared history, shared language, and shared culture. White Americans are every bit as much a people as Frenchmen, or Britons, or Palestinians, or any other people you care to name. And it's not place of residence that makes you a member of a people. If that were true, a mouse in a stable would be a horse, and Mexican mestizos would be Americans. It's all the things I mentioned, but mainly, it's your ancestry that makes you what you are, and which determines the content of your culture. White Americans fought hard for independence from the British Empire in the Revolutionary War. We wanted to make our own decisions. We wanted those decisions to be made based on what was good for us, not what was good for a faraway dynasty which, by the way, utilized lots of non-white labor and also countenanced the virtual slavery of white people. Everybody knows we celebrate that independence on July 4th. And those men who imposed literacy tests and other measures in the South to keep the fecund non-white mob from controlling the political process were also working to keep decision-making power in the hands of our people. So were Jefferson and the other founders of the American Republic when they made sure that only whites were counted as citizens, and that only whites could become citizens, too. They didn't hand out ballots to Amerindian tribesmen. They didn't hand over citizenship rights and political power to Africans. They didn't open the border to aliens and stand there, offering them jobs and green cards and taxpayers' money and amnesty for breaking our laws and even the right to change our laws. No. That would have been absurd. That would have been the diametric opposite of what the founders had been fighting for. That would have been giving up our independence. That would have been giving up our right as a people to have our own government, just for us, a government by white Americans, for white Americans, and of white Americans. That is the essence of independence. That is the essence of what the founders created when they created America. That is the essence of what our soldiers died for, and that is the essence of what made America great. The founding fathers were white separatists almost to a man, and the republic they founded was, albeit imperfectly, a white separatist nation, until the subverters really took control in the 1960s. The subverters used their radio and television networks and newspapers and publishing houses to convince us that not giving away our nation to non-whites, that not giving away our independence and self-government, was hate and evil. But wanting one's own people to have its own government and its own nation, and wanting one's own people to survive, does not necessarily entail hate of other people or other races. Why should it? The truth is that racial hatred is greatly increased by the forced association inherent in a multiracial society, as the crime columns and editorials of our newspapers amply show. They are filled with the hatred, convulsions, and intellectual dishonesty inherent in multiracialism every single day. Where the races have their freedom and independence, there is very little hatred involved. Do the Danes hate the Japanese? Do the Guatemalan Indians hate the Bushmen of South Africa? I don't think so. But drop 1 million Danes into Osaka, or 500,000 Bushmen into Quetzaltenango, and I think you'd see some real problems. The author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson, was a lifelong racial separatist who not only did not want integration, but actually wanted Africans to be relocated to another continent entirely. Those who control the media are desperate to revise Jefferson so that they won't have to eject him from the American pantheon. But The Atlantic magazine floated the idea, proposed by tired old establishment warhorse Connor Cruz O'Brien, that Jefferson be evicted from his place of honor in American history because Jefferson's philosophy is incompatible with, quote, multiracial democracy, close quote. And so it is. O'Brien states, quote, "It follows that there can be no room for a cult of Thomas Jefferson in the civil religion of an effectively multiracial America. That is, an America in which non-white Americans have a significant and increasing say. Once the facts are known, Jefferson is of necessity abhorrent to people who would not be in America at all if he could have had his way." Close quote. And WorldNet Daily conservative star Richard Grenier said in the Washington Times that Jefferson was comparable to Heinrich Himmler and declared that the Jefferson Memorial should be demolished stone by stone. Throughout his public life, Jefferson held true to his concept of humane racial separation, which he summed up in his Notes on the State of Virginia, 1781, Query 14, quote, "Among the Romans, emancipation required but one effort. The slave, when made free, might mix with, without staining the blood, of his master. But with us, a second is necessary, unknown to history. When freed, he is to be removed beyond the reach of mixture." Close quote. Removed beyond the reach of mixture. And it goes without saying, granted his own independence in a distant land for the express purpose of preserving our independence. No wonder the multiracialists who have taken over conservatism want Jefferson's memorial torn down, brick by brick. If you're near Washington, I suggest you lay a laurel there this week. But multiracialists, some of them malicious and some of them equality lunatics, and greedy businessmen who wanted cheap labor, prevented the repatriation idea from ever really getting anywhere. The millions of freed slaves and their descendants stayed in America, and now are being supplemented by even more non-white cheap labor invaders. Some of the old Anglo elite treated their own people like garbage and continue to do so, particularly in their enthusiastic or pretendedly enthusiastic embrace of the new money Jews and their multiracial imperative. The colonization, as the relocations of freed slaves were then called, began in the early 19th century under the sponsorship of many prominent men, men like Francis Scott Key and many of the founders themselves. Their efforts were enough to create Liberia and its capital city, named for one of the backers, James Monroe. But they never really made a dent in the African population of the United States, probably because too many people would have to stop getting rich if the old apple cart was upset. Another effort of the founders to keep America white was their Naturalization Act of 1790, in effect until the 1950s, which mandated that only whites could become citizens of the United States. The media, or more properly, the Jewish establishment which controls them, are far more passionately multiracialist than the old money elite, who were divided on the issue. That part of the old elite which wanted multiracialism wanted it only as a way to get rich. The new Jewish elite uses multiracialism, including the college-educated dupes who believe in it, as a way to destroy all obstacles to their complete power over the earth, and the genocide by amalgamation of the European race is one of their most ardent desires. Some of the old money elite probably had convinced themselves that any harm to the race caused by the importation of stoop labor was far off, minimal, and correctable. But the new elite has made a religion out of multiracialism, a religion in which actions which tend toward racial preservation are defined as evil, and actions which tend to racial destruction are defined as good. No people with such an inverted morality will long survive on earth. People who throw away their own independence and freedom lose the ability to control their government, and soon it is no longer their government anymore. It becomes just an association of self-interested liars who extract the highest price possible for whatever betrayal they can get away with and still retain the favor of the media. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how nations fall. I love my people. I don't want to see America die. I don't want to see European civilization die. I don't want to see the uniquely noble and beautiful race, which brought us everything from gray-eyed Athena to the Saturn V rocket, go extinct. That's wrong, if anything is wrong. And don't kid yourself. That's where we are headed, at a little more than 10% of the Earth's population and falling fast, and with the elite purposely importing hundreds of millions of non-Europeans into our homelands and using their media to promote a fallacious morality in which opposing this genocide is somehow evil. If the spotted owl deserves a territory of its own, where its survival as a genetic type is assured, then so does the European race. It is clear to me that blacks, mestizos, Asians, and others, not being as soft in the brain on this topic as the befuddled whites, identify openly with their respective races and form organizations almost without number to advance their interests, a fact which is easily verifiable by a glance at the Encyclopedia of Associations. When whites do this, in most countries in the West, they are vilified by the billionaire media elites, when they are not actually arrested or killed. But white men and women, even those who are as liberal as you can get without actually being off your rocker, keep moving away from the brown tide. You can find them all over rural, still mostly white America. They are refugees from what used to be California or the horrorscapes of our former industrial cities. They will tell you sometimes, in cautious, looking-over-the-shoulder tones, about how crime or crowding made their former homes unlivable. A very few will dispense with the code words, but most cannot. They are obeying their feelings, deep feelings among the men and women of our race, feelings that call for open space and green fields and splashing water, and the piping sounds and bright faces of white children playing in the glen, not unlike the scenes that must have filled the countryside while the Parthenon was being raised on a hill in Hellas long ago. Our people instinctively want freedom and independence. We want, and we desperately need, a place for ourselves, a place where the government belongs to us and us alone, a place where our children can be safe and where no other group's interests will come before their interests, a place where the power is in our own hands, a place where our culture, our science, our music, our art, our dreams will be allowed to live and develop as nature intended, without deformation or interference from others. On this Independence Day, please share these ideas with your family and friends. Maybe soon you will write to me and share your concerns and help us awaken others. We need to support each other. We need our own media that never stop broadcasting the message that we want our independence back. That's what we're working for every day at the National Alliance. We white Americans stand at a threshold. We are still the overwhelming majority in this country, but we're falling fast. We have a very brief window of opportunity in which we can get our independence back and restore our freedom. That window of opportunity is called your life, because you're living right now, and I'm living right now. Let's get together and do something positive right now.